The MX Vice Show.
Everybody, welcome to episode 161 of the MX Vice Show. We have another action-packed show ready for today as we look forward to the MXGP opener in Argentina this weekend. Obviously, we're joined by Adam Sterry and Brad Wheeler, but before we welcome them, big shout-out to Whole Shot Motorhomes, Fox, Scott, Fly Racing, Kawasaki UK, KTM UK for jumping on board to sponsor these podcasts. Obviously, firstly, Whole Shot Motorhomes is the UK's specialist motorhome dealer for motorsport transport. They specialise in garage motorhomes and race vans that are suitable for a wide variety of sports, such as motocross, enduro, karting, mountain biking, and more. Check out especially the Commander motorhome that's sure to fit your needs. Obviously, check them out online on their website. We also have an article on our website and a YouTube video on our channel. So get involved with all they're doing. It's really cool to see that. And thanks again for them for jumping on. All right, firstly, welcome Adam Sterry. How's life? And thanks for joining us, mate. Obviously, cold over there in Europe, been a brutal pre-season, obviously, with the new team. So how's it all going, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks for asking. Nice to speak to you boys again. And it was actually... Going into Hawkston, I was a little bit behind on bike time, actually, compared to last year. We got the bikes a little bit late, so I started a little bit later, put on a few extra kilos in the off-season, as that was a bit longer. And then went to Spain, so started in Belgium and went to Spain for a few weeks. And, yeah, I had a crash in Spain, ended up injuring my hip. So that sent me back another 2 weeks. And then, yeah, I was back in Belgium. Weather was so bad, hardly could ride. But we did what we did and, ended up being a little bit behind, about 3 weeks, I would say. But it's all good. Hawkston was good and I feel good on the bike. So bikes didn't change, just a different team. Same suspension, so didn't take too much adapting. The physical and the feeling on the bike was what I was missing a little bit. But Hawkston was one of them, you know, one of them sketchy races that where your season could end pretty quick in the first race. So just happy to get through that and actually feeling really good at the moment. So looking forward to it.
Awesome to hear, mate. And obviously welcome Brad Wheeler to podcast MX Vice Tester. So how's life and thanks for joining us too, mate.
Yes, not too bad. I mean, weather's again been pretty bleak the last few weeks. We even had some snow on Friday night. But luckily it kind of warmed up over the weekend gradually and managed to get out Moto 101 on Sunday and do a little bit, and it seems to be brightening up moving forward. So hopefully gonna do some actual racing soon and more testing. Twinner have just sent out some stuff for us to test, including a new product they got coming out in the end of February. So gonna put that to the test and hopefully gonna figure something out with the Triumph boys. They've got a UK test coming up sort of March April time, but we're going to try and do something a little bit different with them, so that'll be good. Obviously ballsed up the passport thing, so I wasn't able to go to the Florida thing, but I've moved on from that and put that to bed. I don't stay up thinking about it anymore, so but we're good. Weather's looking up, so hopefully back out on the 24YZ450 soon.
Yeah, awesome to hear, mate. And obviously with Adam changing teams to the Schmeeker team, so how was that system? How did the deal come about? And obviously, how were your thoughts on last season with the Saarholz KTM? Obviously, highs and lows, had some really great races, a bit of injury going on there, mate, as well. So just that's a brutal world of motocross, I guess. But just tell us about the new deal and your thoughts on how last year went for you as a whole and if you were satisfied with it.
Yeah, so obviously last year, like you said, there was high points and unfortunately I got injured at the last race of one of the ADACs. And that kind of took me out of the championship hunt of the ADAC, because obviously that was the goal, to be the ADAC champion. And yeah, I was on course of fighting close to the front of the championship until I broke my hand. And fortunately, didn't miss any races, but it meant I DNF'd that the last motor there. And yeah, with it being halfway to just past halfway in the season, meant I dropped a bit of points. And then obviously in Bilstein, Geldof, sorry, it was a complete mud race. And yeah, unfortunately, I had a DNF with the bike there. So that kind of took me out of the fight for the championship and just, yeah, left me in fourth, the same as the year before. So a little bit disappointed with that, but I felt like my riding was better. Obviously, I won an overall in Mull. That was nice to take my first overall at an ADAC. But yeah, the team is good. You know, it's their main focus is ADAC and not really on GPs. And one of the main reasons why I switched teams was, yeah, to be back racing in the GPs while I'm still young enough and feel like I can still do good results. You know, so that was my main motivation for switching. And yeah, Jeff, the team manager, he came to me at one of the rounds of the ADAC and explained the situation and their vision and what they are going for and making a big step up. So yeah, we've worked out a deal and I'm going to be back in the GPs for the majority. Not going to Argentina, and there's an ADAC when the Indonesian rounds are on, and yeah, not going to China, so all the other rounds. So 16 rounds is still plenty of GPs and racing, which yeah, I'm feeling good, and hopefully I've improved again from last year. And we'll see. It's hard, you know. The MXGP class is no joke, and yeah, you're fighting it a little bit, you know, against the factory boys. But yeah, keep improving. I still think I can do something good, and we'll see. You know, we'll see in Spain in 3 weeks' time.
You briefly touched on the Hoxton International earlier on about just like how it went and things like that. But the last year you had like some real good results there, and like this year the field looked a lot deeper than probably like the strongest we've seen it in a long time, with obviously like both Kawasaki riders and Herlin's Colden off, Jonas, Ferrato, just like a real strong group of people. Can you take much out of that race with, in terms of sort of where you're lying, what needs working on? Like, is it similar to a GP, or is it just kind of just a race just to, you know, just so you've got some gate drops?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's just a race. I would say you can never really take anything from any of them pre-season races. Like, from in the past, you can kind of get a gauge, like if you're where you should be or if you're close to there. But the actual end result, I never think really matters much to any of the riders. Just if you have a good feeling, or just to get a gate drop before you start your main races, you know. But yeah, like you said, I think from a crowd perspective, I think it was one of the busiest, if not the busiest, Hoxton International I've ever seen. Well, I don't know if Ed, I guess you were not there being in ours, but Brad, I don't know if you was there or not.
Yeah, I was going to go, and then was going to Wembley for the Arena Cross, and then I was going to Florida to test the Triumph, and then ended up at home. So, yeah, did I? Long story short, I wasn't there.
No, but one of them, like going back to Hawkstone, obviously for me, it's a local race for me, being in Chester, not so far away. So for me, it's always important for me to do that race, especially the last few years when I'm not racing in the UK as much. And yeah, the field, like you said, was a lot deeper than last year. Last year, I ended up fifth overall, but I felt a bit more prepared coming in. And the track was a bit more forgiving, as in dry. So it wasn't as risky as this year. I come in a little bit behind and just wanted to ride solid, get some gate drops and just see where I was at. And actually, I was happy with, I ended up 10th overall, which the result obviously is not what I wanted, but the feeling and the riding race two, I had a good race. And yeah, the track was one of them old, wet, Hawkstone, rutty, could go wrong at any moment type tracks. So was happy just to get good feeling, and yeah, I think that's what like as you're saying with Ferrato, he had a big crash just in the last moment with the super final, and yes, it only takes one split second of lapse concentration on a track like that and it can be season over. So I think them pre-season races, no one wants to take any risk really, just get through it and yeah, just get a couple of gate drops before the season starts.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. That's the plan. And obviously, did you take some time off, have a little bit of a holiday after the season finished last year, sort of spend some time with family and friends? Because it is a long season. Obviously, a lot of the fans see what you're doing, but it is pretty brutal. You got to stay on top of your game, keep training, traveling to the races. And I guess, how you feeling? Pretty mentally refreshed and obviously physically, by the time round two of MXGP comes around, you'll be pretty ready. So the motivation's high and you're pretty refreshed and ready to go. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's important also to have that time off at the end of the year, you know, where I switch off from motocross because it is intense, like you said, and it's every weekend. And yeah, I feel like you need that mental reset, let your body rest for a little bit and just do some normal things, you know, like you can go and drink something and go and eat what you want. And for me, that's important. I know some other people do it different, but I think that mental reset helps me for the rest of the year to do it 100%. And yeah, I think the off season sometimes is the British mentality compared to other countries in Europe, but yeah, that's the way I think it works best for me. After many years of trial and error, I know kind of where I need to get to at the start of each season now and what it takes. So for me, yeah, like I said, it's important that to have that rest period.
Yeah, when you're sort of finishing the coming out of the off season, do you sort of ease back into it by sort of doing a little bit here and there, or is it just straight back in like 30-minute motos, like no messing about, just full on?
Not so full on, just like you said, ease back into it as much as you can if you start in Belgium. Sometimes when it's wet and it's pretty brutal to start with. So yeah, try to ease back into it. Start off doing a little bit of riding, not too much. Normally I start off with like 1 or 2 weeks physical before. Yeah, just to get into the groove a little bit. And then like I said, now I got the bikes a little bit later, so I actually did 3, 4 weeks, maybe even a month, maybe of actual physical training before I actually started riding. So I felt like I was in pretty good shape getting on the bike this year. But yeah, just working through it. And I always like to do different things when I train. I'm not the type of person who likes to go to the track and do always just 30-minute motors and go home, 30-minute motors and go home. For me, it's I like to keep it refreshed and do all different stuff, whether that's sprints or some technique stuff or shorter motos, some more intense, or ones where you need to stand up for a certain amount of laps. Or I like to keep it, yeah, varied. And I think that also helps keeping it fresh and not being boring, because here in the winter, there's also maybe only two tracks, or in this winter, the only one track you could ride was Gravenbruch. So yeah, if you need to go there and do 30-minute motos all the time, it becomes a bit tedious, in my opinion.
Yeah, mate, it's certainly pretty cool what you do. And obviously, it's important to keep that sort of recalibrated approach and just try different things and see what works and just develop that skill set so you're ready for any situation. It's really cool. And obviously, with the aims for this year, I guess you'll be starting off, obviously, MXGP so stacked, so top 10s, top 15s, and work from there. And I guess the ADAC title, you'll be pushing for that. And even the GB MXON team come the end of the year. Obviously, we ran that podcast last year and there was plenty of feedback about it. Obviously, how you were overlooked and had the factory KTM 250 on offer if you were asked about it. So, are they the aims for the year, mate?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the ultimate aim. I would say the main goals is of course to try and take the ADAC title. GPs, I don't really have any goals. It's just I feel like normally you have the front guys, so like the top six, maybe top eight, who are a little bit ahead. I feel like from say 8th to maybe 20th, everyone is pretty similar. So all depends on the start. And yeah, the ultimate goal will be to be on the Des Nations team. We will try again this year. And yeah, with it being at home, yeah, that would be unbelievable. So to finish a solid year off with that would be yeah, the icing on the cake.
Just to touch back on what you said about you like to sort of mix things up when you're practicing, not just stick to like doing 30s. You do like some standing up and sprints and whatever. Do you think it's that's why it's more beneficial to be training in Europe, just because most practice tracks in the UK are like a session. It's very rare you can go to a practice day in the UK and sort of just go in and out at will. Like you kind of, you go out and you got your 20 minutes or whatever, and it's, you're lucky if you get four sessions in. You sort of, you go out for 20 minutes and you're like, fucking, I better just go full steam ahead for these four sessions, and then that's the most I can do. Whereas like in Belgium, you can go out for 10 minutes, do 10 minute sprints, come in, grab a drink, go out, do a 30, come in, do some starts, and yeah, you can really sort of tailor the day to what you need to work on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's where in Europe you have such an advantage. Like, okay, in the UK, if I was them full time, then maybe you can go on some tracks privately, and because riding sessions on a public day can also be pretty dangerous. I mean, over here it's also dangerous when, like, Lommel, we was there on Wednesday and it was like full of 85s and stuff, which, yeah, it's a little bit busy. There was a lot of riders there before Argentina and they was riding as well. And I was thinking, if I was going to Argentina, I wouldn't want to be riding around there. It was quite dangerous. So I feel like you have that in the UK, but yeah, the sessions as well, they don't even seem to be 20 minutes when you go there. It's like between 15 and 20. Sometimes you can do 3 or 4 15-minute sessions, which obviously is not ideal for training, and it takes the whole day as well. As the good thing about here is, yeah, most tracks open at 1. So you can go there, do your training in the morning, you can go to the track. Normally they're quite close. So like Lommel, it's like 5 minutes away. You can go there, you can do your, if you wanted to go and do your 2:30s, you could just do your warm-up 2:30s within 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you're finished. And then, yeah, you can go to the gym or train again. So much more. You can get so much more out of the day than you can if you go on a public day in the UK. Like in the UK, you need to do so much more traveling. But yeah, if you can ride private tracks, like I'm sure Conrad and Tommy and that they don't always ride on public days. So when you can do it that way, there's not so much difference to it being over here. Actually, the variety of tracks, if you took the traveling away out of it, I think the UK has better variety of tracks to be all-rounded. Over here, you kind of get in the mindset of just riding the sand all the time, which when you go to a track like Teuschental or something where it's deep ruts, or like the Adach, which has got deep ruts, if you don't prepare by traveling somewhere over here, it's quite difficult when you're so used to riding the whole year sand and then you just go and jump straight into a rutty track. It's, yeah, the variety over here is not so great, but for the output of training, over here you can get a lot more in the week than you can in the UK.
How difficult is it for you to sort of plan with the team to maybe go to Spain or just somewhere that's got some harder patch tracks? Obviously, riding in the sand is just generally great for training and fitness, but like you said, it's you go to somewhere like Teuschental or like Czech, and it's like rock hard, and it's not ideal when you've been practicing at Lommel all year. Is it difficult to plan to go to somewhere like Spain or into Italy, places like that?
I mean, in my situation, no, because it's effectively the same program that I've had the last 2 years. Like I have my own practice mechanic in Belgium, and we kind of just do our own thing. So like tomorrow, if I wanted to go to Spain, I can go to Spain. So I'm pretty free with that. So actually works really well. But yeah, it's just the travel to Spain, and then you don't necessarily get the ruts. It's the ruts that's the problem. Like the tracks, like to ride rock hard tracks, it's not that difficult. Like there's some in Germany, in Belgium, like today I was at Genk. To find them tracks which are just hard, it's not that difficult. It's the tracks what are like GP tracks which is difficult to find, like the rutty, rough, with square edges, them type of tracks it's difficult to find. But yeah, most people, unless you're based in Italy, are in the same boat, so
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear, mate. And obviously, there's always so much chat about a lot of tracks, especially in Belgium and the Netherlands shutting down and all the complaints. And obviously, Lommel's future is always sort of seems to be up in the air. Have you heard any further things about that going on? And obviously, you can't ride earlier in the morning like you'd like because of those restrictions and stuff. But that would probably be better for you to start the day riding at, 9 or 10 rather than having to wait till after lunch. So just your thoughts on those things, mate.
Yeah, I mean, in Belgium now, it's actually really bad. There's only actually two tracks you can ride in Belgium. In the whole of Belgium, two tracks. I
Right.
mean, I don't know if you've seen on the internet the other day, they did some sort of protest with the farmers. Joel Smets was there. Yeah, a lot of, like, the hands from Kemier, Factory Yamaha, they were there. So, yeah, Lommel keeps trying to get closed down by just one person who just moved to Lommel from somewhere else. Not even like, yeah, I don't even know how that's a rule. Also in the UK, like, I don't understand if a track's been there for so many years, how somebody can come from somewhere knowing that the track's there and then get it shut down. It should be like, okay, if the track starts making too much noise and the people that are already living there have a problem with it, then okay, maybe. But yeah, no one should be allowed to just move somewhere and get a track closed down that's been there for like however many years. Like, that's completely wrong. But yeah, we got a bit sidetracked there. Sorry, mate. What was the original thing you asked me?
About the tracks shutting down and also just about the training times. Obviously, you'd like to be earlier in the morning, wouldn't you, mate? Rather than being at after lunch because of those obviously timings you can use.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, sometimes in the summer, some tracks open at four.
Wow.
Four till nine or four till eight. And it's like, yeah, okay, it's for people when they finish work, all right, but yeah, then I've got to sit around until 4 o'clock to go ride. So yeah, it would be much better if you can ride in the morning. Some tracks you can rent, like Veldhoven and Genk, you can rent them in the morning and go ride, or the track owner lets you ride. But yeah, the starting at one, I don't like it, but I mean, it's not the end of the world. For me, it would be better if you could start at 9 or 10, ride and then train afterwards, rather than the other way around. But I guess it beats 3 15-minute sessions in the UK.
Yeah, you said about sort of people like Conrad and Tommy have got access to their own sort of private tracks. Do many riders have private tracks in Belgium, Germany, and places like that? You kind of don't really seem to hear about it as much as you do in the UK, or that might just be because I'm in the UK.
No, nobody has private tracks over here. The only thing is, like, if you're on maybe like Factory Kawasaki, for example, they rent the track because the money isn't a problem to rent it, if you're just, say, like, if me, I want to go rent it, they won't open normally for one ride, just to ride in the morning or something like that. But nobody has private tracks where no one else can ride. As far as I'm aware, everyone just rides the normal days, and if it's not public day, they rent it in the morning or the day after when it's rough or something like that.
Yeah, it's cool to hear your thoughts on it, mate. And obviously, is there anything in particular you're working on? Obviously, getting to the hard pack when possible. The sand skills are good. Obviously, starts are so important in MXGP and just all the technical stuff. Is it just everything you're working towards as a complete package, or is there a couple of things you're particularly focusing on?
Yeah, just being overall better everywhere, I would say. Obviously, that little bit of speed you need in MXGP extra to make the difference. Starts, we haven't really worked on yet, but that's something we need to really work on because, yeah, like we just said, if you start ninth, you can maybe finish ninth. If you start 18th, maybe you finish 18th. It's difficult to, in that pack of riders that you're riding, like, just to be in MXGP now is like, when you look at the riders, it's just, even, I don't want to say an achievement, but it's valid when you're in there, because if you may be racing someone in 18th who's world champion or been on the podium before or won a GP, or and when anyone you're racing in MXGP has got so much experience that it's so difficult when you come to racing them. Like, they know when to block you to not let you pass, and all them things, what people don't maybe see from the outside. Which is why it makes it so everyone tries to take the next step, and take much more risk. And I think sometimes that's why that ends up being more injuries. It's just everyone's trying to push the boundaries and push the limit to be that, to get that half a second, to get that extra half a second is that who's willing to take that little bit extra risk or try a different line or, and yeah, as you know, the sport sometimes you can do everything perfect 110% and sometimes it doesn't go your way. It's not your fault. So that's what makes it so exciting, I guess, and so extremely difficult to be a world champion in MXGP.
What's your thoughts on Jorge Prado? Obviously, he's pretty heavily rumoured that he's going to be going to the States for 25. So do you see him giving it 110% this year to sort of retain the title, or do you kind of see it as he's just on a bit of a wind down year, like doesn't want to do anything that's going to jeopardize his future over in the States?
No, I don't think so. I think he'll go 110% for the title. In my opinion, unless the only way maybe not is if you have something sort of like when you reach your ultimate goal, you know, then maybe you don't get as motivated or something like that. But I don't see that, in my opinion, in him. Obviously, multiple MX2 world champions. So, I don't think that will happen to him. I think he'll go 110%. Maybe it even works the opposite. Maybe he tried maybe even harder this year because it is maybe his last year in MXGP and then start something new next year. But I think he'll do well in the States as well. I think actually in Supercross he did pretty good. Obviously it was majority mud races, but I think for not growing up on Supercross and just going there and learning it, obviously he's very, very technically a very good rider, so that helps in a Supercross situation. He's one of the most talented motocross riders that there's ever been, in my opinion. So I think for him it wouldn't be so difficult to adapt, as you've seen in America, to just go there and have a bit of an off-season doing it and already be quite competitive. Yeah, it just shows that I think having a full season, I think he could improve even more.
Yeah, he's obviously a very complete package, like you said, the starts, the speed, the skill, the technique, the way he navigates sections, very intelligent, measured, doesn't really crash too much. But it was really interesting to hear you talking about the starts in MXGP, how hard it is to weave back through the field. Obviously, you really only saw Herlings and Fevre last year be able to do that. And obviously, guys as well and truly capable, and guys like Sewer and Renault. But it's really difficult. Even you look at Prado, if he didn't get those starts and those second motos weren't particularly great, and he only won two GPs last year as well, so he found it tough to get through the field. So it's just difficult for anyone, and even guys like Guadagnini and Ferrato have said in the past, if you get those bad starts, it's just so tough to even break the top 10 almost. So that's pretty much a testament to what you say, mate. Do you think, with in terms of the title picks, who have you got as the favorite at the moment? Do you have guys that are obviously been impressive in preseason? Herlings is building really well, as we've mentioned, and obviously Fevre is always going to be strong, and he has that sort of never say die attitude. And same with Renault, the no stone unturned, just so mentally dedicated and a fierce competitor, mate. So who have you got at the top of the tree coming into Argentina?
I mean, I think guys have looked really good in the off season from the races, from what I saw. The Honda, in my opinion, handles really, really well. I think, so you can't overlook the main guys, I guess. Geyser, Fevre, Sewer, Jeffrey, Prado, I'd say they are the favourites. Ultimately, I think for speed-wise, they all match each other. I don't think there's going to be much difference when it comes to raw speed. I think just the consistency of being there every weekend and, like we said, the starts, I think that's the key. And I think that's what helps Prado so much, is he's so good at starting that he doesn't need to take the risk. He doesn't get as injured as much. For that reason, he can just run his own lines at the front. And when you're battling in the MXGP class, obviously, to make a pass, you need to push that extra bit, and that's when mistakes happen. You can't see because of the roost or maybe a stone. The line blows out from the rider in front. There's so much different variables when you're battling in the pack to when you're in the front. So I think they're the favourites, but yeah, I guess even Argentina, you won't be able to tell. It'll be the within the first, I'd say, five rounds, then you can really see who's improved. But I think it will be between the main guys that I just mentioned.
How do you foresee Yago Geert's doing in his first sort of full time on the 450. Obviously, he's had some strong showings on the 450 at the MX of Nations, but yeah, obviously jumping in for a full season is a different kettle of fish.
Yeah, I mean, another really good rider. I don't think he'll be fighting for the title, but I think he can take podiums or in certain races. I actually think he looks better on the 450 than when he did on the 250. I think he makes less mistakes on the 450. But yeah, outside them main guys that I just mentioned, I think, yeah, you have the guys like Yago and Flandrin and Jonas or Ferrato and stuff like that, that I don't think are title contenders but can do good results as well on certain days. So yeah, it's gonna be a difficult year, you know. Hopefully we can mix it with them boys, and yeah, hopefully we can fight towards the front, keep improving each round. And going back to the starts, what you said before, like I had it in my head when you mentioned about the starts with the metal gate, you know, it's so difficult now to actually get a good start against the factory guys, because it's almost like MotoGP style starts where the electrics and the bikes completely set up for the mesh, you know. And on like a smaller private team, you know, you don't have the full factory electronics ECU for the gate. Like back when it's dirt starts, you couldn't have any of that because it's depending on your gate prep, each different conditions, different throttle position, different positions sat on the bike. As now, it's just the same every GP you go. So yeah, my opinion is that's a lot harder on a private bike to get a good start.
I think the grids are the worst thing to come into MXGP since that green net that they used to put around the outside of the track.
Luckily, I never raced for the green
net. Yeah. Just, but you know what I mean? It's just everyone's back wheel. Like, it's not, if you got within a meter in it, you were just fucked. But yeah, like you said, it's just, you've got the like factory Honda, like the electronic systems they have are just unfathomable. Like, it's like you can't even really comprehend what's going on in that bike. And then, like you said, the privateer teams, they're just, it's just sort of engine work in like a whole shot device, and that's as good as you're gonna get, and you got to try and compete with these guys that are like on fucking spaceships, basically. It's like when, like you said, you can have
a few starts like next to Prado or with Prado and or like the Dutch Masters and stuff like that, and it's just over the gate already looking down the back of the door, so it's a bit like,
yeah, it's like you sit.
Sometimes
in the same,
you feel a little bit
spot.
Like, of course, you can improve. Yeah, like you just do the same thing every race, which, okay, I get it. Like in Indonesia, when it's 40 degrees and 90% humidity, you don't want to be packing your gate. And like, yeah. And now you can just go to the start gate like 10 minutes before and then go on the sighting lap, you know? So that side of it's better. But yeah, for an actual, I'm sure if I was on a factory Honda or factory Gas or something, I'd be completely all for the metal gauge. You know?
Yeah, but yeah. I just think
you're fighting against it, it is quite difficult. Of course, you can still take a good start, but you need everything to be perfect. Your reaction, no wheel spin. Yeah. You need to have the throttle on the correct position. That your clutch needs to get the correct amount of bite. I mean, there's a lot of variables rather than just getting an ECU and just holding the throttle flat out and it stops at the certain revs and that's the launch control, you know?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Just, I think, obviously, there's so many variables in the past. Like, you'd have a concrete start or you'd like a sand one, or it'd be hard pack or tacky. And I mean, obviously, yeah, like you said, in Indonesia, when it's 45 degrees and you just, nobody wants to be there, it's ideal. But I mean, I'm not a uphill to school guy, both ways type of guy, but I mean, even back in the day, they were doing like 45 minutes on 500s. It's like, if you've got a pack of gate with a brolly stood over you in the shade, it's not the end of the world. I just think for someone like, for example, someone who's a good starter, but might not necessarily, if like you had a lessee, like going back a couple of years, turned up, not necessarily on a factory bike, but as a decent starter, it's like he's not the guy that's going to come from 15th up to 7th, but you give him a whole shot, he might hang in there for a couple laps and get a 7th or 8th type thing. But yeah, like you said, the Dimash is such a, it's so level for like everyone's mesh is the same. So like everyone's doing or aiming to do the same thing. It's not as less technique, I guess.
Like this year as well, like I'm glad now we're like an official team, because last year I went to my first GP in Arco and I was in that B qualifying session. And yeah, how that worked was, if you qualified first in the B group, even if you would be 10 seconds a lap faster than the guy first in MXGP, you could only go after all the official teams, then you would have your gate pick. So even if I qualified first in the B group, I would have got 24th gate pick or something at Arco, which is a tight 180 left where everyone lines up from the inside. So it's almost impossible already from the start when you go to something like that. Like, it's like, how can you take a good start from 24th on a start which favors the inside? That's like, you need to travel an extra third longer to get rounds of the first turn with 23 bikes on the inside of you. And that's if you qualified first in the B practice, which I didn't. I was like fourth or fifth or something. I had like 30th gate pick.
Yeah, is that the sa is that the same rule this year? Because that is a really shit rule.
I don't actually know if that's the same rule this year,
Like
to be
that is
honest.
ridiculous. Like, yeah,
But I
just
wasn't
because you're
aware of it,
like,
to be fair. I just thought like you have the B practice and like your time, if it put you fifth and you qualified sixth. But
yeah. Like I get like having separate practices for like the factory guys and then the more privateer teams like that. That what? Yeah, that's fine. I haven't got an issue with that. But yeah, if you qualified like second out of everyone, you deserve to go to the line in second, not fucking 20 second. Like,
yeah,
yeah, it's that is a
it's only for the
rule.
qualifying race, but still, like, you qualify and
Yeah.
race, then bad start, it's still not ideal.
No.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's good to have a chat about obviously those factory guys. The sort of yeah, the field just keeps getting more skewed in their favor, I guess, is one of the key takeaways, which is obviously where your gripe is there, Brad, because yeah, it's not easy. Obviously, being a privateer in MXGP, it's like nigh on impossible when you're against those guys on the best equipment. It's a massive step, and especially for those MX2 guys stepping up on privateer or doing their own programs, sort of setups like Jan Pantsar or Gifting or whatever. Obviously, Van der Most like's got a good setup, but yeah, really cool conversation to have anyway. But obviously, Adam, I want to get your take on the other Brits in MXGP. Obviously, Watson's back on the beta for another crack, being getting stuck into those pre-season races. And obviously, Gilbert on the SS24 KTM there obviously had a win in Talavera in the Spanish race there. So, have you been keeping in touch with these guys? Obviously, Watson's pretty close to you, I know, mate. So, how's it all been? And probably excited to have a couple more mates out there in the GPs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the more Brits in the GPs, the better, in my opinion. Yeah, we need to get more in there. And it's good that there's now three in the MXGP class. So, yeah, I mean, Gilbert, I haven't spoken to so much. I've seen him a few times over at a training, but I think, yeah, he's up for it. And I think he's enjoying it at the moment on the KTM. Like you said, he rode good in Talavera. Ben, I speak to pretty much every day. He's been in Italy the whole pre-season, so I haven't actually seen him. But yeah, I think they've improved a bit on the bike, and I think he's feeling better. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where them boys will stack up in Argentina, but again, I'd put everybody in that group, you know, where they can finish eighth or further back. It just depends on the start. So, I know Ben had a problem with trying to improve on the starts on the beta. So I think maybe they've improved that. But yeah, I speak to Ben almost every day, but we don't chat about motocross. So.
Yeah, it's the life
Will
stuff, is it?
asked me loads about it, about motocross or about him, but I couldn't tell you. But anything else I could tell you, but not we don't talk so much about the what's going on in the motocross world.
Oh, mate, we definitely wish him all the best and hope he's going good and he has a great season because, yeah, he's got all the talent and just hopefully that framework can keep getting better so he can have all the tools needed to succeed. And obviously, just your take on obviously Askew be doing the AMX 250, super talent, very elite young rider. And obviously, Bobby Bruce on the DRT Kawasaki team in MX2 will be great to see him having a crack and hopefully they can both stay fit, healthy, and just really make positive strides as obviously to get to the level you guys are at in the MXGP one day.
Yeah, I mean, good job for Steve Dixon as well for taking on the two young British guys. I think that's nice to see, you know. Yeah, like I said, more British guys in there, the better. And yeah, I mean, the EMX is difficult, you know, especially now. I think there's 10 rounds. So I swear there was like 6 or 7 or 8 or something when I used to do it. Now there just seems it's almost like a full season of MX2 when you've got the EMX class now. And yeah, Bobby, I think he can do well in MX2. Depends how strong the bike is. Again, goes down to the start. If he takes a good start, I think he can do really good. But the problem is you've got that battle against the Austrian group, you know, the Factory Gas, Factory Husqvarna, Factory KTM, and the Yamaha. I think if you're not on one of them bikes, it's a bit of an uphill struggle in MX2 because you lack the power, you know. But we know Steve's good at performing it on a good rocket ship of a bike. So, yeah, hopefully he's got another one of them and we can see the British guys fighting at the front. That would be cool to see. And, yeah, we need that British talent coming through. So that would be nice to see.
How do you see the MX2 class sort of shaping up this year? Obviously, with Geertz moving out the class, and he's probably obviously didn't win the title, but he's probably been the strongest rider for the last couple of years. And Adamo looking to sort of retain that title, and Everett's sort of now really building into that KTM role. Do you think Adamo's the favourite going into this year, or do you think someone else is probably more of a favourite?
I mean, I think Adamo, you've got to say, is the favourite being the reigning MX2 champion. But I think Kai De Wolf looks really good at the moment. I think he could be potential world champion. But yeah, it's the MX2 class, you know, you would put a lot of money on saying Yago would have been world champion, but sometimes it's just doesn't go your way, you know, so... MX2 is a difficult one. I think there you see a lot more mistakes than MXGP. And there is a lot of them guys in the KTM group that can win. Obviously, the Kunin brothers were really strong, but yeah, I would have put Liam Evans also as a favourite to be world champion because I think he can be really consistent. He's the type of guy that doesn't really make that many mistakes. He, in my opinion, would be there every race. But yeah, Lagenfelder, Adamo, Kai De Wolf, I think you've got to put them as the favourites now as Everts is not at the first round.
Yeah, it's a shame for him missing that one. And obviously, Kai Carsmakers won't be there either. But yeah, Lagenfelder is probably looking like the guy to beat heading in, I guess you could say, really good in pre-season. Obviously, he had a crash in one of them that cost him, but the speed and in that sand at Riola, he was super impressive. And obviously, his teammate, Marc-Antoine Rossi, is just an absolute weapon as well. Super skillful, really bright future, very technical. And obviously, you already seen what he could do, getting the 7th in MX2 in France. Obviously, Zanchi on the HRC got a 9th in that MX2 race in France when they were VRT KTM teammates. So I guess that new HRC 250 is going to be fascinating to see them running that team again, bringing it back. And they said they based that bike on the Lawrence's 250 and he's working with Jackie Vimon. So I guess it'd be cool to see the HRC guys back, won't it, Adam, in the MX2 class?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think they need Honda as one of the main brands. You know, I think they need to be in both classes. So that's cool to see. Going back to them guys that you just mentioned, I don't really see, they're based in Italy, so I don't really see them. Like Adamo and stuff, I see them here. It's like Lagenfelder, Rossi. They are based in Italy, so I ain't seen any of them pre-season apart from the races that they've done. But yeah, again, young riders, I don't think they're there for the title, but I think they will win GPs and be on the podium. So that will be interesting to watch, you know, just before I'm going on the line, watch the MX2 race. Always good to keep up to date with it, you know.
Do you see Beneston making the leap? That's a consistent race winner, not just sort of like the more flash in the pan he's kind of been previously?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I guess you could add him to the group of favourites also. Someone that I forgot about there. But, yeah. I'd say he's in with the favourite groups. You have to put him there as well with multiple podium finisher, and obviously on a strong bike. They obviously switched teams, so I guess the bike will be similar. I guess it's the engine from Yamaha. I don't really know the situation there, but yeah, he'll be in the mix for sure, especially on the hard pack rounds. Going to be an interesting year, actually. I'm looking forward to watching that race and see how it unfolds.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be fascinating, mate. Just as we wrap this one up, because we're about to jump on a preview with Jason Thomas as well, just any final thoughts on the season ahead and the team structure, and just thank all the sponsors you'd like to, mate, and helping you make it all happen. And definitely like to thank you again for joining us too.
Yeah, no problem. Pleasure. Always happy to join and talk about stuff. No, just thanks to the Zwicker team, obviously, for giving me the opportunity. Yeah, we're working hard. It's a long season. We need to stay healthy. Yeah, thanks to my practice mechanic here in Belgium. He works really hard as well. The usual, my personal sponsors, mum and dad, and yeah, everybody that helps put the effort together. It's a team effort, and we're working hard. We're feeling good, so we'll see. We'll maybe jump on in a few rounds in and see how the progress is going, and yeah, hopefully it's good progress.
Oh, for sure, mate. We're all wishing you all the best. And any final thoughts from you too, Brad?
No, I just think, like Adam said, it's MX2. I think it's going to be a real nail biter this year. I think that the favourites that he said with Kaida Wolf and Lagenfelder and Beneston and Adamo, I think the biggest issues they've had in the past is just their consistency. So I think, yeah, whoever, obviously Adamo got the title last year, didn't really win that many overalls. So obviously he was the most consistent last year. So whether or not the people that sort of get in the more overalls like Beneston can iron out those wrinkles and sort of turn those sort of eighth and ninth place finishes into sort of like third and fourth on the bad days. I think that's where the title is going to be won and lost, where you can where you can limit the bad days.
Yeah, well said, yeah, mate. And obviously, thanks again to the sponsors in Holshop Motorhomes, Fox, Scott, Fly Racing, Kawasaki UK, KTM UK, as well as even Strokes for jumping on board to sponsor the MX Vice Show this particular episode. So thanks again, lads, and we definitely look forward to speaking soon.
No problem. Cheers, guys. Cheers, mate.